Boker Tov World. Now today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Mem Tet. Now we warned Sir Richard yesterday that Doc is right there nipping at his heels to start this perek. He's going to learn a bitter lesson. All right, Doc, give it your best. You're muted still. Unmute. I'll try to there we go. Excellent. You notice that Zoom has put all of your friends from South Africa all around you so that they can get the biggest enjoyment. You don't think it's coincidental, right? It's amazing. It's really crazy. Wow. Okay, so we begin the daf right here at the beginning of the Halakha Perek. Hanoder min ha-mevushal. So what we're going to be talking about over here is the definition of the terms. We raised this issue earlier about how exactly do we define the language in a neder. And again, I mean, the question is, a neder is based, remember, on the concept of being able to extend a state that the Torah allows, to create it or extend it, depends if you learn like the Rosh or the Ran, from your own das. So now the question is that dot formed entirely on the basis of language that you use for communication? In which case, it would be defined locally, because, I mean, you communicate locally, and whatever usage is locally becomes the essential meaning of the neder. Or do we have an idea of language because we're using the Torah over here as the marker of the possibility of creating the state? So it should go according to the way that the Torah defines language. Actually, it's interesting that in Yerushalmi, this remains a machloket to some extent. Whether we also take into consideration Lashon Shel Torah. Here in the Bavli, in the end, we're going to come out that the language is defined entirely locally. But let's get into the sugya, and then we'll see how the Gemara works this out. So first of all, we have these general questions. What do we mean when we use the word somebody asserts himself on something which is mivushal? Okay, so, I mean, it's not quite clear, like, what do you mean by it's cooked? Do you mean that it's daf gets cooked in water? Do you mean that it could be just that it's been heated in such a way, is microwaved food considered to be cooked? What exactly is the term bishul? Now, I remember that the Torah is sort of makbid on these kind of terms, because bashel mevushal b'mayim by a korban pesach is actually usur and would have to be tzli, which is mashma that bishul would be specifically mayim. Or on the other hand, you could kind of, if you want to say b'mayim b'davka, so it means if you wouldn't have said b'mayim, bashel mevushal could have meant some other process of preparing foods. So again, how do we define that? Well, first of all, you could certainly eat things that are roasted. Mutar b'tzli, because tzli people don't call in Lashon HaKodesh mivushal. I think in English you would call something cooked, no matter what. But okay, again, this is a question of local usage. So the other interesting thing is that he's mutar b'shaluk. Now, shaluk is very misleading, because usually the word shaluk means very well cooked. And it can't mean that here at Taina's the Ran, because why would people call something that's very well cooked not cooked? But Lamaisa Rashi, or the Mefarish who goes by Rashi, understands shaluk to mean the normal shaluk. In other words, people define a difference between something that's well stewed, that's a stew, so it's been cooking for a long time, like a cholent type of thing, as opposed to something that's just cooked. Again, obviously, it's going to, as the Rambam says, these Mishnayos are not meant to be meaningful directly to you. You have to translate them into your own local terms. We're just trying to show you how careful the range may be defined locally, in which it's less likely that a person will use a term. Once it becomes less likely on either edge of, obviously, there's a wide range of usages that were cooked. But once you get into the question of undercooked, overcooked, or heated through something else, or microwaved, so in Okinami, there you'd have to analyze that idea in your own language, in your own terms. So the Mishnah...
Rebbe used the term guidelines, that the Rambam is saying the Mishnah is guidelines.
Who is this guy, this Rebbe you keep referring to? I mean, you assume he knows what he's talking about. Some young kid or something that was sitting there giving a daf yomi. What? It's a type of guideline, but it's like it's examples of the concept. I'm afraid that guideline means too much to be applicable as it is. That's the way you usually use guidelines, and that's not what the Rambam means. Now, suppose you say konim tafshil. This is interesting because, I mean, you would think tafshil is just an application of the word mevushal, right? So tafshil is something that was cooked. So surprisingly, that's not the case. So tafshil is used in a different way. That's why these are very beautiful examples. So tafshil, at least in the Mishnah's term, somebody says tafshil shanit teva'im o she'ini to'im, and to'im does not mean literally to'im, as the Ron points out, to'im is lav davka. To'im is just a way, because this meanwhile teaches us another thing, not only the loshen of the neder in terms of the object, but also in terms of the verb. So the object is locally defined in the concept of to'im really would be the people would use to say, I'm not going to eat it. So I'm not going to taste it. Does not mean I'm not going to taste. Okay, so such a person, interestingly, it doesn't have anything to do, according to the Mishnah, with the mode of the cooking. It rather has to do with whether it's eaten together with bread. And that's what a tafshil means. So a tafshil means some type of, what's the English word for something that's eaten with bread? Anybody have that?
Condiment? Not condiment.
No, that's a flavoring. No.
We use dip.
No, really? dip as a specific.
I always thought that it was a casserole, actually.
That's usually what it would mean in terms of the dinim of brochas. But over here it means something else. What it means is that's the type of thing that is edible with bread. Now, in those days, this is really weird, they used to eat, the Gemara makes fun of the Bavlim, you know, the Bavlim, because they would eat their oatmeal with bread. So they would call them the idiots who eat bread with bread, because it's basically the same thing. Usually the point is if you have something that accompanies the bread, so it sort of complements the bread. It doesn't taste exactly the same as the bread. But, you know, these Bavlim, they like everything to be sort of homogenized, which, of course, is bovel. That's the meaning of bovel, right? So that's the marble. The marble just homogenized everything, as Rashi says. So they still keep keep up their homogenization process, and I guess that accounts for a lot of the yeshiva experience, because they focus on Talmud Bavli, and that's very different from the Yerushalmi. And over here, if it's Masa Kedera Rach, so it's sort of soft cereals, boiled cereals, let's say, or some type of soft, you know, other accompaniment to bread, so he's also, but he'd be allowed to eat things that are thick and are close to solid. Now, take a look at an egg, for instance. You can have an egg that is soft-boiled. You can have an egg that's hard-boiled. Both of those accompany breads. I'm telling you, there's a word for something with bread. What's wrong with you guys? You're all as aphasic as I am. What's the matter with you? Nice young minds, come on. What?
A relish?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, you've been working too long in that deli. No, that deli itself, can you put it on the bread, no?
But maybe the way the Ethiopians use injera feels like this. It's instead of a fork and a knife and everything, you use the injera to eat whatever you're eating. You rip up a piece and it accompanies everything.
No, that's later. Sorry, that's not this. Okay. And that, so there's different kind of eggs, right? But they had a betza turmuta. Now, a betza turmuta, that is really a wild egg. So what you would do is you would cook it 1,000 times, hot water and then cold water. So this shrunk the egg until basically what you had was food to accompany you to Mars, because it shrunk the entire egg with all of its protein into the size of a pill. So you would swallow these things. You certainly couldn't eat it. We ought to send this to NASA, actually. You couldn't eat it together with bread. You only pills with bread. And these were egg pills. That's amazing. You get a lot of insights into the way things have changed. Anyway, so he's Mutterberg.
Entree?
Now, entree means it definitely is a French word. Entree actually means the main course, I think, in right?
68 things to go with bread, entree recipes.
Okay.
No, entree means the main course.
Yeah, the main course. But the main course in the sense of going with bread, Barney is saying. I never knew that, but perhaps. Okay, fine. Or maybe that's just a suggestion of somebody who wants to eat bread. These are the entrees that can be eaten with bread, which would actually work into the Mishnah. So get onto Google if you want a full list of all of the things the Mishnah is referring to. Okay. Anyway, so the Beitza Turmuta can't be eaten with bread. And neither can a Dalat Harmutza. A Dalat Harmutza is actually a type of pumpkin or a type of gourd, and it's too tough to be eaten with bread. Okay. Interesting. So again, I mean, the Ron brings the Rishalmi, and there it's slightly different than we have over here. So in other words, if something is mevushal, first of all, it means water, cooked in water. You can't include roasting. You can't include microwaving at that time. And it also means fully cooked. Not undercooked and not overcooked, if you put together the various Rishonim. Some say overcooked, others say undercooked. And it has to be liquidy enough that you can eat it with bread. And the tafshil, that really doesn't matter. It's called a tafshil, even if it isn't properly cooked, or even if it's microwaved soft oatmeal. At that time, it would have been called tafshil. Another Mimaisa Kedera. Again, Mimaisa Kedera here does not mean a casserole. Here it means, in terms of Nedarim, Inu Asur Elami Maase Retachta. So it has to be something that was made by a lot of cooking. A lot of cooking, again, the things that are brought in the Gemara, and particularly in the Yerushalmi, as remember we've had before, they used to have chilka and tisni and tirgin and solas. They had these different ways of preparing grains, which they cut them into two parts, each grain three parts, four parts. And these would be the different types of cereals that they would make. And those were what it's referring to over here, Maisa Kedera. And if you say konim hayored likedera, so then anything that goes into the pot, so then he would be osir b'kola mitpashlim b'kedera, so that anything that you would put into a boiling pot in order to get it prepared, it doesn't matter if it's just for a minute or something, that would also be called a mitbashlim b'kedera. So again, this is utilizing one term and slightly different grammatical constructions of that term or contextual constructions of that term, and you can see that each one of them is sensitive to local usage. Tanya. So it's interesting that over here it says that if you're talking about the mevushal, so then it would be something that would be mutter bitzli. But not everybody agrees like this, because here we say another menam mevushal mutter bitzli, and Rabbi Yoshia asks the obvious question. He says, that can't be true. You're usher bitzli. It's a beferisha pasuk, no? Afal pisha ein ra'ya ledavar. We definitely see a zecher ledavar, because it says, vayevashlu ha-pesach be'esh kamishpat. What? They boiled the Pesach? La-halocha kamishpat? What in the world? This is in Divrei Hayomim? How could they boil a Pesach? You can't boil a Pesach. So if it says la mishpat, so then that must mean that we're using the word bashel to stress it's not bashel mevushal b'mayim, it's bashel b'tzli. Aha. So you see very clearly that the Torah refers to the word bashel as tzli, because it kacha tochlu oto. So it has to be tzli. So what are you telling me? That tzli is not included? Salima Balkam Ifke, is that in fact a machlokas? Rabbi Yoshia holds that language for Nedarim is defined in the Torah. Halecha Chalashon Torah. So you take a look at what the Torah uses as a term, and that becomes the definition. And the Pasuk says that Tzli is included in Bashel. Whereas our Tana holds, no, Benetarim Halecha Chalashon B'nei Adam. That would be a very, very fundamental machlokas. Is that indeed what the machlokas is here? Look. So as I mentioned earlier, the Yerushalmi actually remains with this, as the Ron brings, remains with this as really being a part of the issue. And, okay, we don't paskin like that Yerushalmi. We go according to Lashon B'nei Adam. But there's still an area where it's true, where we saw this before, and that is if we don't know what the usage is. So then we look to Lashon Torah, and there's another nafkamina lahalacha that's interesting, which is brought by some of the later poskim. Suppose a person makes a neder in Lashon HaKodesh, and that's not the language that he speaks. So, you know, so this is like people who don't speak Hebrew and they daven. So they have a different tfisa of what it is that they're saying than someone who's actually speaking this as the way he would think about it. So over there, enochinami, if a person uses the Lashon that is not his Lashon at all, so then we understand that the Lashon of the Torah is what defines the way in which he's using it, because he's referencing not used language, but language that occurs in the Torah. And therefore, we would have to look there in order to figure it out. So there are places where it would still be Negea LaHalacha, defining things the way Rabbi Yoshia was looking at. But Lamaisa, there is no Machlokas, says the Gemara. It could very well be that the whole point over here in the Braita of the Machloket is to bring out how different areas that are close to each other would be using words. And therefore, it might very well be a classic example of different meanings. So, markiatre, markiatre. I mean, there's things that if you say in London, they mean literally the opposite of the way you say things in New York. I mean, it's very strange, but that's the way it comes out, right? So, you table something, or something is moot, or it means the opposite if you're in different places. You say, but they're both talking English. I mean, the Americans haven't used it for years, obviously. But so the same thing is true over here. It could very well be that the only difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yoshia is where they live. You know, so it could be that Ba'atr the Tana Dilan, the Tana of our Mishnah, they were careful to call Tzli Tzli and Mavushal Mavushal. Mashain Kain Ba'atr Rabbi Yoshia, they were looser, and they would call Tzli Mavushal too. And therefore, it was not really Nogea the Pasuk. What's wrong with you? It's not Nogea the Pasuk. So why does Rabbi Yoshia bring the Pasuk if it's not Nogea the Pasuk, for heaven's sakes? Yeah, he brought the Pasuk, but he was just showing you that in the Makar, in the Torah, the term has like a broad usage, right? So it's very reasonable that if people continue to use that usage, so then that, I'm not bringing a raya, I said it's Zecher B'Alma, so it's like an esmachta to the way things are used, but it certainly is not a real raya, and as I mentioned, it would be Nogea in cases where people are using Lashon HaKodesh, or it would be Nogea in places where he doesn't know what his intent was exactly. Omra Abaye. Sorry, Konem Tafshil. So we're saying he is allowed to eat something that is a hard food, a solid food. What? Why? He said tafshil. Doesn't tafshil mean like cooked food? Why is he allowed to eat something that's I don't know, a piece of meat he's allowed to eat? Omra Baye, hi Tana. Oh, you know, I wanted to mention to you that it's very interesting that the Rambam actually brings, his Lashon is very similar to the Tosfos Ritz Pshat. The Tosfos Ritz says that the idea of shaluk that we're talking about is not undercooked or overcooked the way that Ron was talking about it, but rather non-spiced cooked. So in other words, if something is spiced when it's cooked, so then it's mevushal. If you just put it into water because you want it to be very well done, then you'll decide what to do with it, you know. That's called sholok, and it's interesting that it's clear from the Rambam that that's true as well, because he mentions if it has tavlin or it doesn't have tavlin. He has to talk about the difference between sholok and mevushal, but it's clear that the tavlin in the cooking is part of what makes it mevushal, according to him. It's fascinating. A completely different way of looking at it. I never thought of stewed in that way. But lemaisa, you know, we do use shlika in terms of preparation of things that are not necessarily foods. So let's say you want to soften skins. We would say you were shy like them. It's not you're mevashal them. You let them sit there and cook and cook and cook. Obviously, you don't flavor them. So the idea of shalika would be using long-term hot water preparation. The same thing would be true in preparing for canning. You don't flavor the food, but you cook it very well and can it while it's hot, and that would be shalika, not bishal, you know, to make sure that it's entirely bacteria-free. So there is a different, completely different usage. That seems to be the way that the Tosfot says beferish, that's the meaning, and the Rambam indicates it very strongly. Okay, so continues the Gemara. Now, how do you explain the fact that tafshil allows you to eat something like oatmeal? Thick oatmeal is not considered to be tafshil. That's crazy. I mean, isn't thick oatmeal like the ultimate tafshil? You've been cooking it in the pot until it... Omer Abaye, that's because this Tana does not see tafshil as something that was mevushal, even though it's made from the same word. This Tana understands that the usage where people say bring some tafshil, what they mean is bring something to accompany the bread. That's what they mean. In which case, anything that's eaten with bread is called tafshil. So called midimisacho beirifta. That's what people mean by tafshil. And we see that. Vatanya, there's a brisa that says exactly that. Hanoder mina tafshil, asur bechol mine tafshil. And that means that he's usur. I don't care how it was made, because tafshil does not relate to bushel. In which case, I don't care if he roasted it, I don't care if he stewed it, I don't care if he cooked it in as a normal bishul. And not only that, a person like that would be usur in hitriot rakot, so he would be usur to eat soft pumpkins, because those are good for people who are sick. Shacholin ochlim ben pitan, they eat as part of their bread and butter, so to speak, squashed, covered bread. So then that means that it's included as a food eaten with bread. What? Squash? Pumpkins? Don't you know anything about Halloween? But Reb Yirmiyah Chalash, I mean, Reb Yirmiyah once got sick. They called a doctor. The doctor was coming into Reb Yirmiyah's house to medicate him. And he walks into the house and he sees there's a pumpkin on the table in the kitchen. He says, I ain't coming into this house. This guy's crazy. He's suicidal. He walked out of the house and he said, Malachamuta itle leden bebeite. This guy actually brings in the Malachamavas into his house, gives the Malachamavas a place on his table. My God, did you see that? That scary face in that pumpkin? He's obvious. This guy's a kind of death worshiper, and I'm supposed to fix him? Get out of here. Ana Eila Asoyate. The guy is insane. I'm not going to go in there. So how are you telling me that people who are sick, they eat squash if the doctor ran out of the house? Lokasha. It actually depends on how hard the squash is. I mean, this doctor was talking about these Halloween pumpkins. I mean, those are pretty scary. And you throw one of those on your head, and it's big trouble, right? That's the scary pumpkin head stuff, which we had actually in Gemara Chulin. They made a pumpkin head for this guy who got a skull injury. But anyway, so that's the difference. If it's hard squash, then it's scary. If it's a soft kind of squash, then it can be eaten with bread. Rova bar ula omar. No. We're talking about different things. Hobakara gufe. The story over here with the doctor, that was talking about the pumpkin itself. And the brisa is talking about the gavi pumpkin, which is gave the gave de kara. That's the inside, the soft insides of the squash or the pumpkin. And, you know, they sell those in cans for making pumpkin pie. I mean, come on, you're not going to tell me pumpkin pie is dangerous, are you? So that is something that can be eaten when it's softened, and the poor will eat that. And I know that that's true, because Rav Yehuda said that if you take the insides, softened inside of squash or pumpkin, and you eat it with beets, that would be wonderful. So luliva de kara basilka, that's very healthy. And luliva de kitna bekutcha. Actually, if you eat the flax, not the flax itself, but the luliva, which is the inside, softened inside, if you eat that with kutach, which was the dip that they used to use in Bovel, that was made out of sour milk and so on. So that is also very healthy, but don't tell this in front of an Amah Oretz. I mean, you remember the Gemara before about flax boy. All we need is for the Amah Oretz to find out that flax is good. They'll be running around stealing everybody's flax out of their field. It will be the end of agriculture. So don't say it. Apparently flax boy was not alone. So it sounded like a weirdo, but over here, apparently it was pretty nafuts. Rava Amar. Rava said, listen, you're confusing your language. You know, here we're talking about language. You're confusing your language. You think that when it says cholin, and it means that people who are sick eat this with their bread. It does not mean people who are sick. The doctor is absolutely right. That would not be very good for the sick. But when it says cholin, it doesn't mean sick. It means the weak people. Or the sickly kind of people. And that's referring to Talmidei Chachamim. I'm walking to the Beis HaMedrash. Everybody looks like they haven't been in a gym for 20 years. I mean, they're walking around over there like they're half dead. And those are sick people. I mean, they're pretty bad shape. So if you're going to give them something to eat, you can give them pumpkin. I mean, if they really get sick, so then you can't give them pumpkin. That's all. It doesn't make an afkamina whether it's soft or whether it's hard. But for people who aren't really sick, then it would be okay to eat it. Fine. And this is Rava Lashitasai, who understands that the word cholin can be referring to Talmid Chachamim, because he said, keman mitzalinan al ktsirei ve'almeri. So there we were talking about the machlokas about whether Adam is nidon b'chol yom, or Adam is Nidon on Rosh Hashanah. So according to Rabbi Yossi, Adam is Nidon b'chol yom. So the Gemara says, this was a Havamin, and then we're Doichet, but the Gemara says, so why do we have a bracha of Rofei Cholim, in which reminds me, please remember Yehuda ben Miriam. So in this Rofei Cholim, why do we pray for Cholim? It's already been decided on Rosh Hashanah, so what's the point of praying for them? Must be Kiman Kribyosi, because according to Kribyosi, Adam Nidan B'chol Yom. So since there's a din today, so we want to daven for them for today's din. Lamaisa, the Gemara says, that's not true, because Yofa Tfila L'chola, whether it's Kaidim L'Gemar Din, Ben L'Acher G'mar Din, that doesn't matter when the person is Nidan. But anyway, but the bottom line is that, look at these words, Kitsire and Marie. Now, kitsire, that means sick people. But marie means bad off, sickly, right? And this is Rava. So Rava obviously puts into a similar category people who are sick or people are sickly, which is a nice, in terms of English, is similar to the idea of cholim. So what do we mean by cholim? We could mean katsire, that are really sick, or we could mean marie, that are weak. And therefore, it means exactly what Rava says over here, that cholim, here in this brisa, doesn't mean cholim, it means marie, so that there's two levels of cholim. Umutar ba'aveh. Then we said he's allowed to eat thick porridge, right? Thick oatmeal, we called it. But obviously, it doesn't have to be oats, whatever it is, any type of porridge. But that means that the Mishnah is like, but not like Bavel. Because, as I mentioned to you earlier, people always used to make fun of the Bavlian, that they're so homogenized that they think it's very tasty to eat oatmeal with oat bread. Well, that's not clear. Maybe it has some kind of variations in it, because maybe they're eating oatmeal with wheat bread or spelt bread. I mean, that's not as bad as eating oatmeal with oat bread or Wheaties with wheat bread. Well, the Gemara is going to ask, how crazy are they? But that we'll see in a minute. So according to this, it's not like Bavel, because our Mishnah is clearly saying that something that is a thick cereal is not eaten with bread. But remember, Rabbi Zera always used to make fun of these crazy Bavel people. These Baveloi Tipshoi, they eat bread with bread. Basically, they're eating a cooked cereal, which is the same thing as bread. One is baked, one is cooked. I mean, come on. That you consider to be a meal? Omer of Chista, you know, I would like to know how far this goes. I mean, I come from Bavel, and maybe somebody around here, Ika, I should say, the Misha Lahon Lahalan Agdani the Hutzal. They're these people. Now, you know what Nekudot do, right? They make it possible for you to be very careful in your pronunciation. If you don't have Nekudot, so then you might make some mistakes. You'd have to be a big bucky like this. The Nekudot make it easier. But the word Nagdani means people who are very careful. So there, when it comes to food, these are connoisseurs. So now, in Hutzal, they've got people that are very careful about what they eat. Now, if you want to know how crazy we Bavlim are, I mean, I would like to know, like, what the more meticulous eaters in Bavel, like in Hutzal, what would they eat their porridge with? What kind of bread? So, Hadein Daisa, Hechan Male Lamichle, what's the best bread to eat with your porridge? So, would you eat wheat porridge with wheat bread? I mean, like, if they're really into homogenization, like, this would be the best, right? So, is it the chite balachmi, the chite? Or maybe a little bit of variation is okay, like felt kippah versus cotton, straight cotton kippah. I mean, you can't go so far as to actually have it knitted, but you could have a different type of kippah, right? So, I mean, would it have to be, it's fascinating ideas here, would it have to be wheat porridge with wheat bread and oat porridge with oat bread, or could you actually mix and match? So that would mean barley saorim would have to be barley bread, or maybe they would accept eating chite b'desari and sari b'dechite, and that would be better because that at least would give some kind of sense of combining different tastes, right? Now, Rava, he would eat his porridge with chasise. Now, wow, that is very risque, because chasise is actually what we call kimcha davshuna, and kimcha davshuna is oven-dried shot from guns. What was that? What did that used to be? That was oats, I think, right? That was the Kellogg's Quaker oats, shot from guns. Okay, so that was, you got to see the old advertisements. They have people going into the, they have this giant gun. And out come all the Quaker oaks that have been properly cooked, according to the Mandi Omar, who holds that it has to be Dafka Davshine. So that would mean that you actually, they're not completely ripen. You don't let them stay on there for out in the field. You pick them when they're like caramel. You dry them. That's like the, what's done specially to make the omer. And then they used to do that in the oven. It was oven dried and then grinded. And that is sweet. So it gives a sweet flavor to the porridge. So Rava actually had some specially flavored porridge to eat with his bread. Now, the question is, how do you best eat porridge? Now, this is an extremely important issue. What's interesting, it's really an amazing Gemara. Because basically, the Gemara is talking about Isurei Hano, let's say, right? So I don't want to be, when he says She'eni Toim, so what is the full enjoyment of food? Now, what's very interesting is that we know that the Gemara says elsewhere, if you don't see your food, then you're not going to enjoy it as much, right? This is part of the Shalom Bayis of Adlokas Neiros. This is why we say, the Rabbi Yossi says, somebody who's blind doesn't really enjoy his food. You have to be able to get a sense. Uh-huh. Now, we know that infants certainly enjoy the tactile sensation of the food together with the tastes, smell. This is very interesting. So now we've got the way that it looks, the way that it tastes, and we know that the way that it tastes is deeply part of the central information of its smell. So we have taste, smell, touch. Now, if you remember the old advertisements, snap, crackle, and pop. Why snap, crackle, and pop? Oh, because you hear your cereal. Now, anybody who uses SodaStream knows that when you call up SodaStream to order your gas canisters, you get a long advertisement about how to listen to your soda. Hayadata, did you know that you can tell how happy your soda is by listening? So obviously, there must also be some involvement of the sound of your food. So the question is, how much is the tactile sensation of the food part of the hana'a of the oichlin? What an amazing extension of the concept of nedarim, in which the person is swearing off his enjoyment in this world. What does that include? It's quite incredible. I think it's amazing. So Rabbi Bar Ravuna comes into the house and he finds Dad, who is Ravuna, who's eating his cereal with his fingers. So he asks him, Omarle, Amaika Ochomar be a day. Why are you eating with your fingers? We have spoons in the house. So he said, because Rav said that the fingers make your porridge sweet. So daisa be'etzba'ate basim, it tastes better when you eat it with your fingers. So I want to be able to have the full enjoyment of my porridge, so therefore I eat it with my fingers. Now, with one finger, it's already better. With two fingers, that would be amazing. And can you imagine what it tastes like if you put three fingers into it? So go all the way, Jose, and enjoy your porridge. Amazing. So kol shekein betartein and kol dechein betzlat. Wow. Omele Rav Chia, Rav said, I mean, Techia Bere. And Rav Huna said it to his Rabba Bere. Let me tell you something. I believe that oatmeal is highly underrated. So let me tell you something. If you get an invitation to an oatmeal dinner, it is easily worth walking up to a parsa for. And that's great. So next time you get an invitation like that, take it up. Don't say porridge. What would I walk for a porridge? I'd walk a mile for a porridge. Exactly. That's one thing I got to teach you. But I got to tell you something else. If they're offering you steak, I would say travel three times as long. So now we know why the Rogovs are ready to invite far distances. Definitely worthwhile. Yeah.
What? It's interesting. On the previous idea of eating with hands, so as a concert pianist, as training as a pianist, So my hands always had to be clean. And my rule to myself as a young child, so I didn't have to sit with hands in water every time I arrived at the piano, was never touch food with your hands, ever. Nothing, not chips, not pizza, nothing. And, wow. And this went on for decades. And only very recently, I started eating a chicken wing with my hand. And it was a very interesting, fuller experience. I mean, I can relate to this, Gemara.
Wow. That's amazing. That's really amazing. So Rabbi Yossi, So Rav said to Chia, his son, Rav Huna said to Rabbi, his son, no matter what you're eating, if you suddenly feel like there's something rotten in there and you have to spit it out, don't spit in front of your Rebbe. The only thing you can spit in front of your Rebbe, if you're eating squash, pumpkin, or you're eating porridge. And if you feel you got to get it out of your mouth, spit even in front of your Rebbe, because these things, if something's wrong with them, it's like swallowing boiling lead that used to kill people in Bezdin. And if you have to risk your life and spit even in front of the king, because this is death. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda were sitting and eating together out of the same bowl. Now, here is what Rabbi Barnea was referring to earlier with the Ethiopians. So one of them was eating, this was a porridge that they were eating. So one of them was eating with his fingers, and the other one was eating with hutsa. So hutsa is bark of some kind. It was some type of edible bark, but he used it as a spoon. So the one who was eating with the hutsa said to the one who was eating, we don't want to squeal and tell you who it was, but he said to the one who was eating with his fingers, how long are you going to be feeding me the filth from your fingernails? Ad matai atamachi lenitso atcha from under your fingernails. I don't care if you washed your hands. I mean, don't tell me that you sat there and you used a brush for your fingernails. I don't want to taste this porridge with your filthy fingers in there. And he said to the one who was eating with the hutsa, and how long are you going to be feeding me your spit? I don't see you washing off your hutsa every time you put it in your mouth. You put it back in there, double dipping. And at least I wash my fingers off every time I put them back in. So which one of us is the bigger slob? Rabbi Shimon, they had some bluffing. Bluffsin are these types of very difficult to digest figs. And Rabbi Yehuda ate them, and Rabbi Shimon wouldn't eat them. So Rabbi Yehuda said, well, you're so spoiled. Why? What's wrong with this bluffsin? So Rabbi Shimon says, are you kidding? You put these things in your stomach, and you ain't going to get them out of your intestine forever. And you'd see me b'nei me'ayim kolikar. You want to talk about constipation. This is the ultimate constipation. You might as well be eating cement. So Rav Yehuda says, that's fantastic. Because one of the big dangers of constipation is that it's very bad for your weight, right? Because the longer the food sticks around in your intestines, the more nourishment your body is going to be getting out of the food, which saves us a lot of money. We won't need to eat tomorrow because we're still going to have these bloops in our intestines. Fantastic idea. So kosher cane, it would be better. Nismok aleim lamachar. This gives us our diet for tomorrow all in one shot. I think it's a great idea. So he keeps eating. Rabbi Yehuda, Havi Yosef Kameda Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon says to Rabbi Yehuda, wow, you look gorgeous today. I mean, this is like shining. What's going on? Hayom panecha tzovim omaleh. So he says, well, that's because yesterday the people that work in your house, they went out to collect vegetables and they brought me beets. And I ate those beets. Now, I just want to mention, they did not provide any salt. But I ate those beets. Imagine if there had been salt. But the beets, as they were enough to make me look like this. That's why I'm shining. Ve'ima chalnum b'melach, just a message. If there would have been some salt around, just imagine, koshiken shayu p'neinu tzubin. I mean, we would look extra special, beautiful. Now, this was his answer to Rabbi Tarfa. But there was another time when he was approached by this Ahimatronita. So Ahimatronita, of course, that was the Roman Hollywood lady, you know. So she also commented to Rav Yehuda, you know, I don't think it's really right for someone like you. I mean, aren't you a judge? You always look drunk. So, I mean, a guy who's a judge, you know, I mean, at least drink in private. I mean, you constantly look like you're, you know, you've just had a good drink. You're always shining, you know. So I don't think that's right. How can you be a Mora who's a drunk? So Omar La, so he says to her, you know, Himenusa Beyoda Dahitza, that particular woman, referring to her, by her emuna, sort of taking her down. I mean, I would be telling you a lie. Look, I can tell you the whole year, okay? This is the alcohol that I have. I make Kiddush, I make Avdolah, and then I got this terrible problem that on Pesach, I have to drink 4 cups, right? Now, because of those 4 cups, I get such a headache that between Pesach and Shavuos, I have to walk around with ice packs around my head, tightly wrapped. That's how much I enjoy alcohol, okay? So, so don't accuse me of drinking, but I'll tell you why my face shines. Chochmat Adam, Tahir Panav, that's the real reason. So when someone is a chacham, then it makes him look beautiful. That's what you got to put her accused him of being a dayan. On the contrary, it's the dayanut and it's the limud haTorah that makes me shine. Now, a tzeduki once said to Rabbi Yehuda, which is usually a tzeduki, it's a censored version of Christian.
Meaning?
Man, the only thing I conclude, judging from the way your face is always bright, is that either you live off of the stock market and never do a damn thing with your life, or you make money off of lending beribit, or you grow pigs. Now, that's a very, very, you know, people who grow pigs tend to look like pigs. They end up making a lot of money, and they look like little piggies. So either you are one of the former or one of the latter. Omar Lay, so he said to him, listen, I can tell you with the way that Jews make promises, Biudai, Tarvayo Asirin, both of those things are usher for me. But I can tell you what I think about people like you. It would be good if you would go to every bathroom in town. I mean, like I do, you know. I go basically between my house and the Beis HaMedrash. I got 24 different bathrooms. I stop in every one of them to make sure I got none of the crap that you got. And therefore, maybe you should try the same thing. So you sort of cut him down. You remember, of course, that in the Gemara, the relationship to Minus and Tavayda Zora is bathroom humor. Rav Yehuda, Kad Azilavei Midrasha, speaking about Rav Yehuda going to the Beit HaMidrash, he used to take along a gulfa, carrying it on his shoulders. A gulfa is like a big pot of some kind or a earthenware wine jug. And he would carry this to sit on. And he would say, you see, this is not considered to be a pagam in my covet. Yedola melacha, look how choshev it is doing work. Shemichabedet et ba'aleh. Here I do a little bit of work. I carry, so to speak, my chair with me, which means I don't need to sit on the floor like everybody else. Rabbi Shimon, he used to carry a basket on his shoulders to go to the Beis HaKnesset, the Beis HaMedrash. And he said the same thing. It's a kovet. It's not considered to be mezalzel that the Rav is carrying this thing. Now, Rav Yehuda was basically very poor. And because of this, he didn't have anything to sit on. So Devisid, Rav Yehuda Nafka, once Rav Yehuda's wife went out and she got an incredible bargain on some quality wool. So she made a glima de hutfe. Glima de hutfe means a high quality shirt out of it. And whenever she would go out in public, she would wear this so people wouldn't realize how poor they were. So kanafik l'shuka mikasya bay. And when Rabbi Yehuda would go out to the Beit HaKnesset, he didn't have anything that was ro'oi for tefillah, he would borrow this, he would wear it, and he would daven in this. And when he would put it on, he said a special barakah, which was the equivalent, of course, of Malbish Arumim. But remember that Rabbi Yehuda was makbid on every single min. So he would say, Baruch Atah Hashem, and so on, that was Atani Me'il, that you wrapped me in this beautiful Me'il, which wasn't really a Me'il, but in his mind it was Choshev like a Me'il. He would wear it, even though it was really only a shirt. Now, once happened that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel had made a Ta'anit, and everybody was supposed to come and join the rest of the Tzibur, and they would, you know, what you do on the Ta'anit, where everybody participates. And Reb Yehuda didn't show up. So Reb Yehuda lo atel levei Ta'anita. So they wanted Reb Shimon ben Gamliel to understand why didn't Reb Yehuda show up, and not chas v'chalila, that he wasn't mekabel the Ta'anis of Reb Gamliel, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. So they explained to him the reason he didn't come is because he didn't have anything to wear. The only thing that he has to wear is that thing that he wears when he goes to davening. But his wife wears that during the day, so he can't come to the Ta'anit where they spend the whole day, and he wouldn't have what to wear, so he's embarrassed. So Reb Shimon ben Gamliel sent a gift of a glima. He sent him a robe. He said, my gosh, it's terrible. So he sent him this beautiful robe, and he refused to accept it. Now, he didn't want Reb Shimon ben Gamliel to feel that he threw a gift back in his face. So what did he do? So Dali Tzivta, he shows the shliach of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, he says, you don't understand. I don't live like this because I don't have money. I don't live like this because I can't afford to live better. Here, take a look at this. He picks up this mat that he's sitting on, because that's all he had was a mat, and he was shemech on mais and nisim, that when he picked up the mat, underneath, it was filled with golden coins. He says, look at this. I'm a rich man. So the only reason I live like this, chazimayika, take a look how rich I am. I don't want to get any benefits out of this world. I'm saving up my benefits for Elam Haba. So it's explained to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, he doesn't need to give me anything. I have more than enough. But I don't want to take his. I could take my own. But I don't want to live like that. And then tomorrow, we'll see how this is very much part of the same beautiful story of Rabbi Akiva with what happened with his wife. They didn't have anything to wear. I'll know the story. And we'll extend on the Inyan of Anias and Nedarim go hand in hand, which, of course, is the story of Kalba Savua to be seen tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem.